Welcome, Pinto and Sean Bean patrons. Welcome to Extra Beans.
It's time for Extra Beans!
Extra Beans!
Hi.
Hi, gang. Thanks. Thanks for your continuing support. Or your new support, if you're a new member of the gang. Are you giving more thanks to those giving continuing support?
Do you know what? Yeah, I am. Yeah.
These Johnny-come-latelys. No, everyone is welcome. Welcome one and all.
Yeah, welcome one and all. Yeah, very much so. To Extra Beans. What a month it's been.
I know.
The month of October. I can't think of a single thing I did during the month.
No. And I can't think of a single thing we said during this podcast.
Yes, that's quite hard, isn't it? We often get correspondence from people saying that they like the podcast and that they listen to it, and then as soon as it finishes, they can't remember a single thing that anyone has said. Yeah, what's the opposite of it really stays with you? Yeah,
the less quotable it is, probably the more it's packing a punch because you're reeling so hard, I expect.
That's what it
is. Does anyone actually remember what happened in Macbeth? I've got no idea. Might be possible to be a guy who's like a bad guy running a burger van. I don't know. Do you? No one knows. You don't know. You just have a sense that it happened.
I remember that there's witches in it.
There's witches.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
Get down and see Clive Myrie's One Man Macbeth. It's absolutely astonishing. He plays three witches. Mm-hmm. So they've got three Myrie heads.
Yeah.
All wired up to the same Myrie body, his body. He plays three witches at the same time. And he does the whole thing. Well, from the BBC News Centre. It's absolutely extraordinary.
For those listening outside the UK, Clive Myrie is a newsreader and also the presenter of Mastermind, I think.
Is he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's taken over from whoever it was before.
Humphreys.
And Mastermind is a quiz show on television with a great theme tune. Ba 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 ba. Do you know what? It feels like Celebrity Mastermind would be very much within your grasp, Mike.
How do you mean?
I think you're the level of celebrity that goes on Celebrity Mastermind.
Sort of bottom rung dog shit.
Yeah, I don't want to say it.
Backhanded compliment.
But you also have to have a specialist subject, and I have expertise in nothing.
Yeah, what would you go for?
I would have to start from scratch and decide on something and try and become an expert in it. It would be an absolutely fantastic amount of work.
So Mike is a level of celebrity where he could be on Celebrity Mastermind.
Yeah.
And we're on the level of celebrity where we could be on Mastermind. Is that what you're saying?
Which is arguably the better show, isn't it?
Henry Bagger, podcaster from London. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Or do they do the bit they ask you what you do?
I think so, yeah. It'd be embarrassing to have to say you're a podcaster, wouldn't it?
Hi, I'm Ben Partridge. I'm a podcaster.
Hi, I'm Ben Partridge. I'm part man, part bean machine from Cardiff.
I wouldn't be able to sit on the special chair.
That's true.
They'd have to sit at the studio. What would your specialist subjects be then?
I've thought about this quite a lot. So I know someone who's been on Celebrity Mastermind. In fact, we all know someone who's been on Celebrity Mastermind.
Who's had Blur? Yes?
Well, no. So our friend Josh went on and did Blur.
Yeah.
But I know Lloyd Langford went on it, I think.
Did he? I missed that.
I think so.
I can imagine him being very, very good.
Yes, but also having a really esoteric... You know, it'd be like...
What was his topic? Do you know? Do you remember?
It would be like some kind of bluesman, wouldn't it?
Right.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
That'd be quite good.
Anyway, I can't remember what his topic was, but I remember him telling me that for the celebrity one, I don't know if this is true for Mastermind, nor Mastermind, they ask you for your topic.
Yeah.
It can't be one that someone's done before, and it can't be too easy. So often you don't get the one you ask for.
Oh, really?
Because someone's done it before. Okay. Yeah. Right, so then you have to scrabble around for another one.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
But also... You provide them with two books, I think, and they're like, we're going to get the questions from these books. So if you just read the two books.
Man, this is dynamite.
Yeah.
You can't be serious.
Yeah. And I think that's just the celebrity one because they want to be a bit easier on them.
Oh, for celebrities. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, the nation can't know that celebrities are actually idiots. it's key
to
the
social lose trust in the special properties of celebrities.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't know what would happen. It's terrifying.
So, yeah, they just said, right, we're going to take all the questions from these two books. Just read the two books.
So it's Mr. Tickle and Mr. Bump. Okay, Mike? We think you're going to be fine.
I think genuinely mine would be the band The Pogues.
Oh, that's quite good.
Okay.
I think I could do all right.
Let's have a little bit of fun. Welcome to Beans to Mind.
Oh, no!
Hang on a minute.
Okay, Benjamin Partridge. What is the nickname of Peter Stacey, the tin whistle player in The Pogues?
Spider.
Oh, very good.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay,
Benjamin Partridge. In which year was the Irish folk punk band The Pogues, with, I'm reminding you what kind of band they are, but formed?
Oh, that's hard. Because they were a band, they had a different name to begin with, so I don't know if you're counting when they had that name.
What was that name?
Just check GPT, mate. I don't know.
They were called Pogue Mahone, which means kiss my ass.
Really?
In Irish. And they changed it to The Pogues.
Wow. Which bit is the Pogue bit of that? Is that the kiss or the ass bit?
I don't know, actually. Maybe it means kiss. I don't know. Maybe they're called Kiss. So I'm gonna say 1982.
Correct.
Yes.
Nice.
The Pogues gained more attention when the UK TV channel show, when the UK TV show The Tube made a video of which of their songs?
I think, isn't this helped by the fact that they only did one song?
Henry, how dare you?
Is it Streams of Whiskey?
No, sir.
Oh.
No, sir, but if you did ask ChatGPT to invent a Pogues title for a Pogues song.
Yeah. What was it, Mike?
It was The Waxies' Dargle.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, Benjamin Partridge. The Pogues often incorporated traditional Irish folk elements into their music. Name one traditional instrument commonly used by the band.
Banjo.
Yeah.
Nice. Correct.
Yeah.
I think Mike's questions are better than ChatGPT. This is telling us quite a lot about the powers of AI, isn't it?
It's reassuring, isn't it?
You got a question, Mike?
At the time that the Pogues were set up by founder members McGowan and Stacey, what was the name of the band that McGowan was currently playing with?
It had two names. It was called the Nipple Erectors, and then they changed their name to the Nips.
Are you serious? Very good. Very good, Benjamin.
Everything sort of to do with them just sounds terrible, doesn't it? Terrible names. Terrible instruments. But they are. I mean, that Christmas song is brilliant. Here's one for you, Ben. The Pogues went on hiatus in the 90s, but later reunited for live performances. In which year did they officially reunite?
2001.
Correct.
Yes.
Well done, Ben.
I think that's
really good knowledge.
Ba 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 da, 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 victory.
Well, this being a podcast that always has its finger on the pulse, I think it's high time that we finally tackle the mega issue of fashion, which we did this month. And we did so with aplomb, we did so with elan, we did so with grace, I think. I don't know what you guys think.
I felt it was a little bit tight around the crotch.
Oh, yeah?
But that
is the fashion these days.
That is the fashion these days. And what I thought was a nice touch.
And loose around the seat.
We gave it a nice loose seat. And those lovely velour breeches, which went down to nice little arm cuffs at the ankles with little, I love that, with little doilies coming out of them.
Yeah.
Little doilies. That's good, isn't it?
Yeah. And obviously there was decent fashion fare for the general listener, but for the true secrets, I mean, what's coming next in fashion? That's for you guys. Well, that's right.
Yeah. I can't actually remember what we did talk about in the Patreon bit, but Let's see.
But can I say, just be careful with how you use this episode, because it looks like it, but that isn't a hood. It isn't a hood, is it?
It's a nose bag.
It's a nose bag or cowl.
And or cowl. If you think it's a hood, you're wearing it the wrong way around. Have you moved your doorbell?
I've moved my doorbell.
What do you mean? When you said you had to move your doorbell?
I've moved the ringer of the doorbell, so it's now in this room, so I can hear when my thing arrives, because if it's downstairs, I won't hear it.
Okay. Is that your next crate? Your next crate of ale?
It's a golden capo, which means something to Mike and not to Henry.
Ooh, oh, no. Is it a guitar thing?
Yeah, it's actually a banjo capo, but yes.
What does it do, the capo?
Sort of changes the key that you're playing in.
Does it go? Yeah.
What are you going to ask, Henry?
No, I've stopped myself.
Have you?
Yeah, well, part of me.
There was genuine curiosity, wasn't there, for a moment?
Yeah, I'm trying to snuff that out then myself. Yeah. No, does it go along the strings to make that happen? Is it like a little metal thing that clamps across the strings?
Yeah, exactly.
How is the banjo playing going?
I'm not good.
Okay.
But I will be playing in public on the weekend at the podcast festival.
Oh, really?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Which is in the past now, if you're listening to this.
Oh, yeah. So it would have been a disaster. I mean, it's the equivalent of throwing a child off a cliff into the sea when they haven't quite yet learned how to swim, I would say.
And they just swim automatically, don't they?
They have to.
Like a spaniel.
Banjo players.
Well, it's swim or die.
Yeah.
It's swim or die. It's going to be the same with your banjo playing, isn't it? Because if your banjo playing doesn't go well, then sadly this will be very poignant.
Then you drown.
You'll drown in a sea of fists. Don't you? From the angry audience. How do you know when you can play banjo, by the way? Is there a way of telling? is it ukulele, they say, is the easiest instrument, isn't it? Is that right?
Easiest string instrument, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, these days I think a lot of kids learn, don't they, in school? Because it used to be when we were kids, we'd learn the recorder. I assume you did the recorder, did you?
I did recorder, yeah.
I actually never did the recorder. I didn't really understand how. People around me seem to have done the recorder. But somehow it skipped me by.
Did you do something else? Harp.
I did the harp, yeah. I was on the lyre.
There's not room for a harp and a recorder.
So I skipped recorder. And it's not something I regret.
Oh, Mike, you poor fool.
You don't know what you're missing.
You don't know what you're missing, the recorder.
Have you still got it, do you reckon?
Ah, the recorder scene.
There was one person who I knew who pursued recorder all the way throughout school, and I remember I found it a bit sinister. into their teens.
There's a place for recorder in a certain kind of semi-whimsical sort of indie band, isn't there?
Yeah,
you can have a few recorders going to create a kind of nostalgic something or other vibe, can't you?
Definitely. I think there are three major recorder music genres. Yeah. There's, slightly too whimsical indie folk band.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sort of Bach.
Mm-hmm. Obviously Bach, yeah. And the reason it's good for Bach is it fits into that category of music. The instruments that Bach had at his disposal were all instruments where you couldn't really change the amount of emphasis you put into a note. You could only just change which notes you did in which order and how long you did them for. Is that true? You know, like the Bach piano from those days,
or like a harpsichord. Yeah, you're right. A harpsichord. It just kind of is on or off.
It's just ding ding.
You can pound that harpsichord as hard as you want.
It'll just ding. It's just got one ding.
You're gonna have to pull off the lid, and start twanging away on the strings themselves.
Exactly. Which means you can't get that real nuance of human expression into it.
You can't rock out, you mean?
And you can't rock out. And same goes for recorder in a way. Like the recorder, it's either playing the note or it isn't. There isn't a lot of
You're absolutely
sort of,
right. Yeah, there's not character. Much expression through a recorder, is there?
So it's good for very twiddly kind of twiddly mathematical sort of music, isn't it?
Yeah.
But Bach does.
Yeah. So then the third genre.
Yeah.
Yeah. Faux medieval folk that might be played in like a sort of theme restaurant that's themed around the medieval period.
Maybe
in a kind of Polish medieval town where you go in and then they serve you a turkey leg and then you can watch someone jousting at the same time.
And there will be a spit, but the animal on it will be plastic.
And the fire will be a glowing bulb.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm enjoying this, but it's moved beyond observational comedy. I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's very specific observational comedy.
It feels like it's something that a very specific thing which happened to you once. Is it?
I think this is common if you go on holiday to kind of Eastern European old towns. There will often be a medieval themed restaurant.
Right.
And you're first in the queue, aren't you, at opening time?
So tankards?
Oh, tankards. Buxom maidens will be serving the tankards.
Yeah. Plumbed? Will it be plumbed?
By which you mean, will every course involve plums in some way? You're yes, correct.
Plumbed beef. Plumbed, a side of plumbed veg. Plum brulee. Everything's plumbed, isn't it? Plum cocktail, yeah.
There's one of the, when I went to Estonia, there was one of these places, and I didn't go. But the one thing that would have got me in there, that I was a little bit intrigued by, was that you could go for some bear meat ravioli.
Oh my God.
But I thought, I couldn't work out the ethics.
It sounds unethical, if not illegal.
It does.
I can't pretend I know what the Estonian hunting laws are.
No, exactly.
For a moment, but I'd have my doubts about that. And how do you know that it is a bear ravioli?
And also, something about putting a bear into that particular Italian dish feels a bit weird. Does bear meat belong in an Italian dish?
I think it's possible that it wasn't ravioli, but the English translation on the English menu had translated it into ravioli.
Okay, yeah, it might be bear dumplings, because that makes sense.
Yeah.
Bear stroganoff.
But it's also very much the sort of the secondary detail of that dish, isn't it? You know, it's not... Whoever decided on ravioli isn't worried too much. They could have put anything, frankly.
Most people don't read beyond bear, do they?
No.
it's a hard yes or a hard no, isn't it? After bear.
It's not based on whether or not it's a penne or a ravioli or a basic stew. It's not, not the problem.
If they had bear, if they had the bear ragu, but with the bow tie shaped pasta, I would have had it. but without the bow ties, it feels a bit immoral. You know what I mean? Because you can picture a bear wearing a little bow tie, can't you?
Or having the time of its life, being forced to dance.
Certainly, if it was a circus bear, if before it was slaughtered, it was a circus bear. If it was before it was slaughtered for food,
does that make it more or less ethical if it was a circus bear?
Great question. I think what it does is it creates a really really complex ethical sort of richness, which actually you can almost taste.
Yeah. If you're on the page of the menu that's entitled Mercy Killing Dishes, then I think you probably should move on regardless.
Yeah. It's the kind of thing that they could do. They could do a sort of live outside broadcast of the Moral Maze from that restaurant.
Yeah.
With what's his chops? Who is it? Fred Dinage? It's not Fred Dinage.
Although, no, it's definitely not Fred Dinage.
Fred Dinage isn't a real person, is it? So probably one of the real broadcasters.
No, it's Fred Dinage from How To.
How To... create a memorable name. He didn't do very well at that one.
Michael Burke.
Michael Burke. Michael Burke. Great
broadcaster.
Great broadcaster. But I think you stick some bear ravioli in front of him, he's not giving you anything usable for hours. He's going to be lost in that, isn't he? He'll just be stuffing his face, eating everything. He does what he does, gets into a frenzy. So, yeah. Medieval themed restaurants in Eastern Europe.
Yes, that's what we were talking about, and whether I think that's probably the major place now. If you're a professional recorder player, you're probably fairly ensconced in one of those places.
Yeah, if you're jobbing, you know, day-to-day recorder player, that's where you're making your living, isn't it?
Also, is it a genre, just playing London's Burning? Is that a genre? Because that's another...
It's not a big money spinner, is it? I don't think.
What instruments did we all learn at school?
Violin. Bit of piano. Quit that quite early on.
Mug's game.
Absolute mug's game. So when I went to my school, which was up to the age of like 12, 13.
And then you left school, didn't you?
Exactly. I'd
straight onto the steamships.
Straight onto the steamships. I knew that when the ocean calls you, Ben, that's... Yeah, we had a music teacher who was quite eccentric. I think I'm going to name him. He was called Leave You.
Mm-hmm.
He was a small, bald man.
Was that his first name or his second name?
Don't know. Just Leave You. He looked a bit like Bob Hoskins.
Okay.
Right.
But if anything, slightly smaller.
Impossible.
And you found the floor in my anecdote. It's made up, you're right. Yeah. You got me.
You've got to look for these little tells.
That's my one mistake.
he was also the fact that he's called Leave You also was beginning to tear away at the feeling of...
you'd be a great lawyer, Ben, because you absolutely, you just skewered me there. Be a great memory in the court case also when you bring in Bob Hoskins and prove that it's not possible to be smaller than Bob Hoskins. So we did orchestral, we did sort of the whole, it was kind of school orchestra and singing. There was lots of singing, lots of choir. I remember he had a very peculiar playlist. So I've always known, there are certain songs I've known about from younger than you're supposed to. Because we were like 9, 10 and we were doing like Carpenter's songs and stuff. And it's obviously just like songs he liked, I think.
Uh-huh.
It was all pre-Spotify. So I think he was kind of using us, essentially.
I think that's happened in all school choirs. Like primary school, we were mainly singing like Simon and Garfunkel and the Beatles. And I think it's just because it's what your teacher likes, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of how it works.
When I'm 64 and Eleanor Rigby being sort of quite particularly popular for some reason. Maybe there's some simple tunes.
I always found that lyric so strange about wearing a face that she keeps in a jar by the door. I always just picture that as a face in a jar that she put on. Because you're listening to songs too young, isn't it? That's what's happening there.
Yeah.
I had no idea what that was about. I didn't understand how, you know.
It's horrifying, taken literally.
Absolutely horrifying. Did you have that as well with that lyric?
Yeah.
I mean, is that the intention of the lyric?
To frighten little children?
Yeah. But you know, it's funny, you are listening to songs. Well, I didn't understand what was at stake in Eleanor Rigby.
What is at stake in Eleanor Rigby?
I have no idea.
You still haven't got the grip with it.
But I used to play with Lego and stuff, listening to.
I didn't understand with Eleanor Rigby what the rice was doing there.
Oh yeah,
why is there rice on the floor?
Of course, it's much later you realise it's about Tim Rice, isn't it?
He's passed out.
The sixth Beatle.
He's been on an absolute bender the night before.
That's why they couldn't work with him.
Yeah, and throughout the 60s and 70s, he would often, wherever you were in the UK, if you got married, he'd often be passed out outside the church, wouldn't he?
Because
And he'd have come back to wherever he was staying with a spare face that he's left in a jar for the homeowner as a gift.
Which was actually the major inspiration for Phantom of the Opera, wasn't it?
Exactly. So all these things, it all makes sense. And of course now, obviously Tim Rice can't be everywhere all the time, so now we use actual rice at our wedding, don't we? Throw as a reference back to that.
And confetti is Italian for with lyricist, isn't it? So
yeah,
that's right. Means,
yeah. Confetti, he is the fetti, isn't he?
Yeah.
And obviously best man speeches are obviously because that's to do with the fact that the best man is obviously Andrew Lloyd Webber. he can't always do a speech at everyone's wedding, so you substitute in
with a legend, you know,
a guy called Potter from uni. I tell you what, this makes me think. Last thing about Leave You.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he made us sing Carpenter's songs. Top of the World, looking that one.
Mm-hmm. What one's that?
I'm on top of the world. I'm on top of the world. Is it looking down on creation, and the only explanation I can find. It's the joy that I've found ever since you've been around. Your love puts me on the top of the world. It's so weird, a bunch of 10-year-olds singing that.
Did you do, why do birds suddenly appear?
I think we might have done. It was all that kind of stuff. It was kind of Bacharach.
Sort of easy listening.
A lot of Bacharach, easy listening vibes.
Calling Occupants, that's my fave, I think.
Which one's that?
The weird alien one.
I don't remember this one.
Where it starts with the sort of spoofy... One Hit Radio, whatever it's called. And there's an alien calling in on the request line.
I think I need to listen to more Carpenters.
There's a really cheesy little skit at the beginning of the song.
Is that Carpenters?
Yeah. And then it's a really lovely song, but it starts with quite a weird little skit. Taking the piss out of a radio DJ. Check it out.
But the other thing is, Leave You got us to do his choir thing because you got free sweets if you did it.
Okay.
So that's what was happening. It was essentially... In modern terms, paying a Spotify subscription.
Yeah, with mojos.
In the early 80s, he was paying sweets in order to hear his favourite songs sung by 10-year-olds.
Yeah, I did same as Mike, piano and violin. Didn't excel at either.
How far did you get with the old violin? With the old fiddle?
No, not very far.
It's an unforgiving beast, the violin.
It's so unforgiving, the violin.
You very rarely meet adults who play the violin.
That's a good point.
No, they tend to be exceptional if they do. Violins, like there's the whole 10,000 hour thing, but with violin, you've got to do your 10,000 hours just for it to sound passable, I think.
Yeah, try doing that in a fucking basement in Hamburg, in a bar in Hamburg, getting people to turn up and pay. Yeah. You have to be, you just have to absolutely pound it, don't you, by yourself?
It's absolutely brutal.
I was given my dad played the violin when he was a kid, so I was given his violin to use. And people used to take the piss at me because his violin case was from the 1940s.
Right.
And looked like a kind of dog coffin. It was it was like wooden and painted gloss black.
Yeah.
It was the unmistakable shape of a coffin.
Yeah.
Heavy
yeah.
wood.
Sounds like a coffin so far. Yeah.
And I had a violin inside. But yeah, kids used to sort of take the piss out of me for carrying it around.
See, now that'd be all the rage, I reckon.
In a kind of goth way.
Proper vintage case.
So they'd make fun of you for being a canine undertaker.
And I'd say, guys, I'm making money hand over fist here.
What, with your canine undertaking work?
Yeah.
I tell you, there's two kinds of guys that get girls, right? People in a band and people that can help you through the very difficult last moments surrounding a loved pet's demise. Yeah? So you take your choice, it's one or the other.
And I'll let you in on a little industry secret, right? They'll never look inside the coffin, so you can just chuck the dog on the side of a...
Very few open casket funerals.
Yeah, exactly. You just chuck it on the side of a dual carriageway, and then we bury the coffin. But it's always the same. We bury the same one over and over again.
You think I'm lying? Go to the A15, Junction 7. Yeah. I always use the same spot.
There's a little pile of hamsters and dogs and parakeets.
Yeah. They're calling it the saddest mountain. People are coming from Japan to look at it.
I haven't worked out how to monetize it yet, but when I do.
But Chalamet's interested in the rights already.
Chalamet's people in touch with my people.
Chalamet. Sleek, glossy hair.
Supple, yet firm musculature.
Take me to the Louvre. Slender biceps.
Pure thoroughbred.
Chalamet.
Equine tail.
Shins of alabaster.
Muscular buttocks.
And the neck strength of a hyena.
Chalamet.
He's a luxury prince.
We think it's the first thing that's equisad and equicute. that's the territory that Chalamet is trying to conquer and make his own.
That's the shining grail that they're all looking for.
He's the only actor that can do the right face for someone looking at a massive pile of cute dead animals.
And if we can find that, it'll be the dead goose that laid the golden duck egg.
The golden duck egg.
The golden dead duck.
Yeah. I leave the little... Well, I suppose what I had could have been seen as a small folded snake coffin. Only a
little flute case.
You'd have to be a UK snake. I did like my little flute case. And I liked the...
Was it snakeskin?
No. No, but on the inside, it had what looking back was an artificial fabric, some sort of velour, but what felt like the most luxurious...
Yeah.
That felt sort of...
Oh, yeah, the inside of a flute case is lovely.
Oh, the inside of a flute case. Because it's hard on the outside, isn't it? Hard and dark and can take a buffering. Can take a shunting, can't it? But on the inside, so soft.
It's cushioning that precious, precious instrument.
Yeah, it makes the instrument so precious, which is so ironic when you hear the absolute filth, the sound that I made with it. But
10-year-old Henry Packer spitting down a metal tube.
Yeah. Just volley after volley of gob. But my flute teacher was so surprised that I passed grade four that she called me at home, which just never happened. I mean, this literally never happened. My mum said, there's someone on the phone for you. I think it's your flute teacher. It's like, how the fuck has my flute teacher got... No one calls. Teachers never call. How's she got the number? What the hell's going on? And I picked up the phone. My flute teacher said, Henry, you passed grade four.
Was she trying to intervene? Did she think you were going to be down at the bottom of the back garden with a metal bin about to toss it into the flames? Stop, Henry! No, stop, Henry! No! Don't do it! Keep it!
Because she'd practiced with me just before my grade and I'd been so terrible.
Yeah.
So terrible.
That's disheartening, isn't it?
At the scales and all the...
And I would guess, Henry, that she assumed when she got that result that you had paid James Galway to dress as you.
Well, he was often hovering around the outside of exam centres, wasn't it?
It's going on.
Try and get a bit of cash in hand.
I'll do it for 80 quid.
Yeah. Well, that's why she needed to call me at home to confirm, because she had Galway in front of her tied up at that point. So it's the only one to confirm. But
he confessed to 7 other frauds from that morning. But wouldn't confess to this one. Incredibly frustrating interrogation.
Yeah, and a couple of completely unrelated mafia hits he'd done, which he didn't need to tell her about.
And he'd fly tip to Toitus on the A31, didn't he?
Yeah. What, creating a rival to Ben Sad Mountain?
He's trying it on.
He's trying. Of course, it's the perfect... James Galway. The perfect high-level diplomatic spy/assassin, isn't it?
The man with the golden flute.
The man with the golden flute. A flute case is the perfect site. Musical instrument case is perfect for smuggling weapons.
Mm. Yeah. International travel. Easy to explain away. Short visits.
Any world leader. Have you ever seen a picture of Kim Jong-un going around a large military facility without James Galway standing next to him?
Those guys are mad for flute.
They love it. Because it gives you instant kudos, doesn't it?
So the only trouble is Galway, he's getting a bit old now. He finds it harder to bound around. They prefer the average despot prefers the flautist to bound around them jauntily.
Yeah. But what he does now is he's perfectly fine still, Mike, to have a massive sort of set of missiles pointed to point at them and nod, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
He's very good at that.
Yeah.
But because it gives you kudos, doesn't it? Gives you respectability.
Galway. He's got a lot to answer for.
Well, the man with the golden gun, the man with the golden flute. Come on.
I think Mike's already made that sort of...
yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
But I left a bit of space. I thought the audience would probably be able to do some of the work. I didn't mention the man with the golden gun because I thought...
It's always funnier if you fully explain it, Mike.
Ben's got a very good line in a party shirt. Ben's got a lot of very fun shirts, which he does pull off.
Yeah, Ben
pulls
off.
I think the problem with them, though, Mike, is I think people probably see me wearing them and they think, oh, that guy probably thinks he's a bit of a character.
They're not like that. No, that's not true. They're not like eccentric, like brightly coloured wacky socks. You're not a wacky socks person. You're like, okay, I've got flamingos on my shirt, but just the quickest glance at your facial expression and what you're actually up to, there'll be no doubt that you are a fairly serious person. You'll be like, you're not wacky. You're not going around being wacky.
No, I'm worried though some of those shirts are a bit wacky.
I think they are. I don't think you should change them. Also, it's showbiz, Ben.
That's true. Yeah.
Special rules.
I have got a pair of wacky socks that my girlfriend bought me. She was in an airport in Estonia. Again, I was not with her. And she wanted to get me something from her holiday or from her trip. And she was in the airport and they had a pair of socks. And on it was little things on the socks were a barbecue, a bicycle, and I think a little beer or something. And she thought, oh, those are all things that Ben likes. I'll buy him these socks. But there was also a word on it in Estonian.
Yeah.
And she didn't know what it meant, but she thought, I'll just buy it from her anyway. And we got home, and I said, I wonder what that word means. And then we put it into Google Translate, and it means granddad. Clothing-wise for me, I've got this thing where really I haven't really bought any new clothes for about 5 years. I can't face doing it.
I know, yeah.
I cannot face it. And so just from here on in now until my death, I'm wearing the same two pair of trousers now, I think. And
yes,
that's it.
Yeah. I can really support that. I mean, I tell myself I'm being green and it's all make do and mend, but it's just I loathe any form of clothing shopping experience.
Yeah.
I can't bear it. And I will avoid it.
And I think I occasionally think, I ought to have some nice clothes, but I can't be bothered.
I actually do quite like clothes shopping.
You do?
It's partly because in London, people talk about the theatre scene in London, but in a way, that's what the pavements are for me. As soon as you leave your home, that's the theatre. Look out the window in Soho. The people, everyone's expressing themselves, and the room is, your home is off stage, essentially. Your home is the wings.
You're in the wings right now.
I'm in the wings. And that's where you've got your costume. You've got your different costume options.
And when you tread those boards, you go straight to the centre of the stage, don't you, Henry?
Who will I be today? Will I be Julius Caesar? So in London, obviously London is cutting edge fashion, yeah?
Yeah, sure.
So there's lots of levels of irony. It's very, very complicated reading what's going on in someone's fashion, what they're wearing. It's like reading a great, you know, modernist novel. So it's like, what the hell? The amount of levels of meaning that are going on. But one thing which is happening at the moment is that it's quite fashionable. I think it's almost, it's called like ugly footwear or something. Ugly, like people are deliberately wearing bad footwear.
Right.
I can see Mike's eyes lighting up.
I like Mike's shoes, by the way. I think Mike's shoes are really cool.
I know. I mean, so, but people are wearing deliberately ugly footwear, right? I'm talking about his flip-flops there. We can...
Oh, yeah, the flip-flops I will
not. Flip-flops. No one's going to... Okay. So essentially, what that means is you can do things like wear socks. So, for example, socks and sandals.
Yeah, sliders. They called
that. That for years was an absolute, almost religious fashion no-no. It was sacrilege.
Yeah,
socks and sandals meant you were at the very best, a pervy geography teacher. At the best. Yeah. Whereas now people can wear them, but what happens is you can get trapped in a kind of meaning, a sort of epistemological confusion zone.
Yeah.
Not sure what that means, but whereby, you know, for example, so I popped out to the shop, I popped out to Pret the other day wearing socks and sandals because I thought, mm-hmm. I'm in a hurry, I can't be asked. Plus, this is a look, it's okay. But as I was wearing socks and sandals, I then realized that some people might look at me and not understand that these are ironic socks and sandals.
Even in London.
Well, they might be out-of-towners. They might be people coming on a visit, coach trippers.
But also, you know, you're maybe not a hip young thing in the way...
Fuck this. I've probably maybe got more of the age and body profile of a pervy geography teacher, have I?
Well, I didn't like to say it. I don't know how to put it that way.
I'm sorry if I'm sorry if I walk around with six pens in my top pocket, in my breast pocket, but the fact is, the first one might break, the second one might break, the third one's a different colour, the fourth one's actually a pencil if you look at it properly, the fifth one is a backup for the third one, I don't know how the sixth one got there. All right!
And how are you explaining the OS map of the Peak District? Is there something about how... I think I read something... There's a guy on Twitter who's really... Twitter famous now, who's like a menswear guy. Have you come across him?
No. Is he the person that did the tweet about who's, was it the King of Spain's suit?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
So he said perfect that the King of Spain basically was wearing the perfect suit.
Yeah.
Right. And fair play, he did look good. And his crusade is that in general, men just don't dress very well. Even ones who sort of make an effort sort of get it wrong, basically.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
wear suits that are too short and their trousers are too tight and they just look terrible. And he's kind of right, I think.
That is true. Also because proper tailoring, which is a dying art, but proper tailoring is all about essentially making... It was before personal trainer. It was essentially a personal trainer. Yeah. That it was quite expensive and it made you look good. But but essentially, it's, you know, all those proportions of shoulder to neck and all those measurements are to make a suit and a jacket, which is really flattering.
Yeah.
When a suit fits, I mean, it sort of turns you into a kind of action figure, just sort of, isn't it? It kind of stylizes the human form, makes your shoulders look sharp and everything. That's why whenever you put on a suit, people always say, you look great.
Oh, I look terrible in a suit. Terrible.
But you got one of Bob Hoskins' old secondhand suits, haven't you? That might be why.
I look like I'm going door to door asking if you want to switch to British Gas. That's what I look like.
So people will say, no, I'm not interested in British Gas. And you'll be like, I'm here to marry you. Oh, yeah, sorry. But is there a British Gas?
Why are you wearing a name saying, hi, my name's Ben, ask me about British Gas? But this guy was basically saying that the essence of fashion really is that you have to dress for who you actually are.
And not for who you want to be.
Well, yeah, exactly. You have to sort of know who you are and what you are and what your maybe what your job is, what the situations you'll find yourself in, and then you have to dress appropriately for that, really, because otherwise you just look odd.
Yeah, but for us, that's grotesque. What would that be for us?
Well, exactly. That's why I'm wearing my pyjamas as I work. I mean,
that's a good point. So you've actually nailed it. You're essentially wearing the uniform, aren't you?
But you two, obviously, maybe less so than you used to, in Henry's case, perform on stage with some regularity. Did you give much thought to what you're wearing on stage? Is that a...
Well, that was one of the things I liked about stand-up in the beginning, I can remember, is the idea that you could just turn up in what you're in.
Yeah.
It only occurred to me later that that was actually part of the deal of the shtick, is that actually what you look like on stage is potentially, you know, has an impact.
That's, and audience. That's when you started wearing the full Seinfeld outfit, wasn't it?
Exactly, yeah, with the mask. I'd paid for a bass player to come with me wherever I went, which wasn't going to work long term.
One thing I used to have with stand-up was I used to do a joke about wearing a cardigan. And this is a real something to try and avoid if you're doing stand-up or starting out doing stand-up, is to have a joke which is linked to a specific item of clothing or something. So I used to have a joke about
wearing... I had this exact thing, Henry. You go first.
Yeah. So I had a joke about wearing a cardigan. So I go on stage wearing the cardigan and I had a joke about it. And I became completely emotionally dependent on this joke. I was like, there's no way I can ever do
it's,
a gig.
It's your bulletproof icebreaker.
It's my bulletproof icebreaker. It doesn't get a huge laugh, but no one's actively giving me a death stare, as far as I know from it. So I would do the cardigan. But then the cardigan was a thick woolen cardigan. Quite often in the summer, gigs can be really hot and unpleasant. I had to wear this fucking cardigan. I'd be sweating like a pig on stage. I'd do the cardigan joke. Then it was like, can I take the cardigan off once I've done the joke? Then it feels a bit contrived. Also, it's weird to be changing clothes on stage. It became a real problem, the cardigan, until I once left it on a train on the way to a gig. So I didn't have the cardigan. I lost the cardigan.
Safety net's gone.
And it turns out it's difficult to make the joke about wearing a cardigan when you're not wearing it. That's what I learnt that night. So I never made that same mistake again. I ordered 40 cardigans that night.
Change the stage name to Cardigan Jim.
Cardigan Jim only played gigs in cardigan. And
I had the same thing. I had early on in stand-up, I had a brown, very thick brown woolen jumper that I made a joke about.
Terrible mistake.
Not worth it. The juice was not worth the squeeze on that particular joke, but I wore that through summer 2010. I think I suffered through that.
Well, I'm still stuck with this bloody moustache, as you can see.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Until I leave that on a train, I'm stuck. I'm in a mid-face rut.
And it's made out of it's a very coarse kind of wool, isn't it, that moustache? It's very, very hot for you. And the skin's
shipped in from Nepal. That's right. Very expensive.
Yeah, Mike sort of nailed it with the suit. That you've kind of got a uniform now for doing performing in, right? So that's...
But, I mean, I love that. I love that, yeah, if I've got a sort of... Like a sort of a proper gig. I mean, if it's a little sort of new material night or something, I will just turn up in what I'm wearing.
Which would be incredibly confusing, therefore, for the audience.
Hugely confusing for the audience.
Why is he's got a Goldman Sachs T-shirt. What is that?
Yeah, he doesn't explain that at all.
What's that about?
But he's also wearing a kilt and Cornish pasties on his feet.
And waders.
Yeah.
And I think a World War I looks like a German helmet.
But not thinking about it is blissful, frankly.
Well, that's what, was it Obama only had two suits? Is that right? Or he had loads of versions of the same suit?
I think loads of people have done that kind of thing.
Yeah,
in the past.
So you'd never think about it.
Unless it's something you're passionate about and into, then it's an absolute gift just to be able to put on a suit. And, yeah.
That's the old David Lynch lunch. The David Lynch lunch.
Which is what?
Does he have the same lunch every day?
So he always eats the same grey T-shirt and brown khaki trousers for lunch every day.
Lightly toasted.
Lightly toasted. With a side of kimchi. And it means he has the mental space to then plan.
Oh, I'd love it if I could then also say yes, and therefore I have the mental energy to expend on creativity and my poetry and my music. But it's just because I can't be asked to go shopping.
If anyone's ever attended any of Mike's gigs, they'll know. So Yeah, he's not being creative with his clothes or the material. So
yeah, exactly. He just seems to have turned up. But I will be on time.
So what does Lynch have for lunch?
So the Lynch lunch is basically a niçoise salad, I think. So it's, okay. it's a tuna and salad.
That tomatoes. Sounds quite work intensive, though.
But it's the same every day.
I know, but the choice is not the issue there, is it? It takes a good bit of time to knock together a niçoise, doesn't it?
Well, maybe it's not. It might not be.
Cheese and pickle salad.
Look, it might not be a niçoise. If I'm making a tuna salad, I'm going to niçoise it. I mean, by the time you've got the tuna out, you might as well niçoise this. Do you know what I mean? That's how I see it.
Of course. Sure.
I don't know the details of the salad, but I know it's the same every day, and I think it's got tuna in it. I mean, I think it's possible that if I was to eat a tuna salad, same tuna salad every day for the next month, that I would come up with the next Twin Peaks. It's not impossible. But it's also possible that it wouldn't make a huge difference.
Triplet Peaks by Henry Pack.
But yeah, it's also possible that I wouldn't.
Well, that's fashion. Just final thought on fashion, really, for the listeners.
Yeah.
Just so you can get ahead of the next season. It's all about batwing, raglan sleeves, halter neck.
And buff. The colour is very much buff.
Very much buff, like a manila envelope is what you want to look like. Yeah. And very, very skin-tight leopard skin trousers. That's the look.
It's lovely that they get that sort of heads up, isn't it, on this show?
Yeah,
that's what and obviously, tank tops, context dependent, isn't it, now for the tank top next season? Because the tank tops are always sort of in and out, aren't they? It's very hard to tell with tank tops.
Yeah. You've got to be ready, sort of hair trigger ready with tank tops.
Got to be hair trigger ready. So have the tank top.
Yeah.
But don't necessarily wear it.
Just wait for the green light.
Mohair shoulders, where possible.
Sort of epaulette style.
Epaulette style. Also, things that you can dress up and down, actually, are out. So it's things you can only dress up or only dress down.
There's no day-to-night stuff going on here.
No, none of that. And pencil cases. Rubik's Cube high heels.
Solve as you walk. Solve as you stroll.
Obviously, fur is out, but photos of otters are in. Mm-hmm. Framed
in the wild,
so framed photos.
No otters in captivity, otherwise you're going to be cancelled in 5 seconds flat.
Yeah,
unless it's a rescue centre where they're treating some otters with the intention of putting them back in the wild later.
But you will need to be wearing the certification.
Call that simple.
Simple.
Now you may remember that earlier this month. You won't have been aware of this, actually, I don't think, just as a listener. But we actually recorded the podcast inside the Large Hadron Collider.
That's correct.
Yes, which is why there was a bit of an echo. Yeah.
There was a bit of an echo issue.
It was a bit of an echo, wasn't it? Yeah.
The other issue is that we were being fired at each other at the speed of light.
That's right. And Mike went back in time at one point, and he thought he was doing episode 3 for season 4.
Yes, because we were in search of the elusive banter particle, weren't we? To see if it was a theoretical particle that we basically, this whole podcast hinges upon, and we rely on it existing. If it doesn't exist, the whole thing falls to bits. But we've never been able to prove it.
But we managed to boil down, didn't we? We actually managed to identify the basic unit of banter at its simplest, the basic repeatable unit of that from which all banter derives.
The anecdectron.
The anecdectron is it's when someone gives you a glass of water and you say, what is this, vodka? That's it. Everything comes from that.
It can neither be created nor destroyed.
Also, if you fire that particle through the Hadron Collider, it goes round it comes out the other end, and all you see is a man being a cake being brought to a table and him saying, well, that's my portion.
That's what it turns into, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
If you heat it up incredibly hot and speed it up to speed of light, that's what happens.
But obviously what we were trying to do was trying to get it to exactly scientific lukewarm, which is very, very hard to do in a non-controlled sort of situation.
And here are some details for how you might try that at home.
I've got no idea what the Higgs boson is.
I feel like there was a time about 20 years ago where most of us could have given a sort of three sentence answer in roughly what it was, because it was in the news a bit with CERN.
When was that? Was that noughties? Was it in the noughties? When was it? Was big news? Was it Higgs boson? Was everywhere you open up the page and it would always be?
It felt very like it was like Britney and Justin Timberlake.
Yeah.
Have split up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we found the Higgs boson. It felt like that era, you know.
But even before they found the Higgs boson, it was Britney's got together with Timberlake.
Yeah.
And there's a rumor that someone in Switzerland is going to turn on a machine that might yield some interesting results, but might also result in the entire universe imploding.
into
the size of an acorn.
That's right, yes.
We don't know.
We felt it was worth it, didn't we, as a risk?
Yeah. And I think people were comforted by the idea that it was underground, that might help. That was a good idea.
Could you date the Higgs boson? 10 tips for what to do on it. There was a lot of that kind of stuff, wasn't there?
Oh, yeah.
It was all across all different parts of the media, wasn't it?
Does it involve splitting an atom, or is that something else?
No, that's nuclear war.
Ah, yes.
I think it involved firing an atom into another atom, did it?
Or it was like a big Dyson, basically, wasn't it?
A big Dyson hoop. Yeah.
It definitely involved going in a circle very fast.
Which is hard to do.
Very, very hard to do.
So maybe it was a particle that was able to lean. I'm not sure.
Could be that. If we think about what a particle is, using the biology, chemistry, physics paradigm, physics, as you say, Ben, that's the basic, isn't it? That's the most basic sort of science there is.
And after that, it's maths. Pure mathematics.
Right, any final thoughts on the Higgs boson?
Well, I tell you what, by the way, I've had an idea recently for the podcast, right? Which I've come close to doing before. I've never actually done it.
Turning up on time.
Which is called...
Nay.
Oh, here we go.
You've had two ideas for the podcast. Right. You've had this one, which we haven't yet heard.
Yeah.
And your other one was this thing where we were going to sew sort of bollock traps.
That's a good idea.
For people. It was a good idea, but have we done it, though?
Have we done it? The bollock traps, unless this is the bollock trap.
Yeah, that was a good idea.
Okay, I think we should come back to that. But okay, here's my other idea. Idea number two, which is called AI Chat Boost. Future chat, future banter, electro chat. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, you want to retire and
hand it over to AI.
Be subbed in by ChatGPT or something.
It's the first step towards that. Which is why not? Where did we get AI involved here? See what AI's got to say. So okay. I've put into ChatGPT. Can I say that legally?
Yeah.
I've written, tell me some lukewarm banter about particles.
Okay.
And this is what we've got.
Okay.
ChatGPT says, sure, let's stir up some lukewarm particle banter! Exclamation mark.
It's pretty good.
I think already in probably in my top 10 friends, ChatGPT at this point. I mean, there's that bloke from my first job. I hardly ever talk to him. He's gone. ChatGPT's definitely taken his berth. So let's drop some lukewarm particle banter. How about this? Why did the electron bring a suitcase to the quantum party?
Oh, I love this. I don't know. Why did the electron bring a suitcase to the quantum party?
Because it had a lot of spin luggage to carry! Exclamation mark. Because it had a lot of spin luggage to carry.
I mean, there might be particle physicists listening to this who are rolling across the floor.
Absolutely.
And just desperate craving that the three of us bow out and give way to...
The Large Hadron Collider had to be briefly closed on Thursday morning. Because the funniest joke of all time. So it said, because it had a lot of spin luggage to carry, I don't get that. And it's got pictures of the winky emoji.
If you know, you know, right?
I mean, it's not bad, is it?
Is there another one?
No, that's all it came up with. But let me try again.
Maybe ask for one about the Higgs boson.
So I'm going to put in banter about the Higgs boson. Of course. Let's have a little fun with the Higgs boson. He's up for it, isn't it? ChatGPT is always. It's never like, oh, sorry, can't be bothered. So... What we've got for Higgs boson is, why did the Higgs boson apply for a job at the Large Hadron Collider?
I don't know. Why did the Higgs boson apply for a job at the Large Hadron Collider?
Because it wanted to gain some massive experience. I like it. I don't get it. I like it, though. Why do we never do this kind of thing? We never just go, here's a joke. Here, got another one. The Higgs boson walks into a bar, and the bartender says, hey, we don't serve your kind here. The Higgs boson replies, that's okay. I'm just passing through at the speed of light.
It's great.
It's not bad, is it?
Here's another one. I told the Higgs boson a joke, but it didn't react. It must have a very neutral sense of humour.
Okay, so I've just put into ChatGPT, how can I tell my colleague and friend Henry that his new idea for our podcast isn't very good in a polite way that won't hurt his self-confidence?
Oh, thanks.
Okay. And it's given me 8 points. Okay. One, choose the right time and place.
Okay.
Two, start with the positives.
Nice.
So, Mike, maybe you can start with the positives.
I really appreciate that you're trying to grow the podcast, Henry.
Thank you very much.
ChatGPT has given us an example. Henry, I really appreciate your enthusiasm for our podcast and the effort you've put into coming up with new ideas.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Point three is using I statements. Express your opinion using I statements.
So you've got nice eyes.
Which make the feedback more about your perspective.
Oh, okay.
So I was thinking about your idea and I have a few concerns that I wanted to share. Rather than you
are an idiot.
Idiot, yeah.
Not your shit. I think your shit. Yeah.
Four, be specific and objective.
That's pretty harsh. That sounds quite...
Provide specific reasons why you think this idea may not work.
I'm not going to be able to handle that.
Five, offer constructive suggestions.
Okay.
What if we explored something else to address our challenges? Six, encourage discussion. Mike, I'll bring you in at this point. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
So I think it's a bad idea. Is that right? Am I doing it right? Or is that a different section? I'm fundamentally scared of any sort of technological advance. I'm filled with fear. Yeah?
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Seven, reiterate your support. For example, I want to emphasize that I appreciate your creativity and dedication to the podcast.
Thanks.
And eight, end on a positive note. For example, let's keep brainstorming together and we can see how we can make our podcast even more amazing.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. So does that mean we're still doing the idea?
Now, hang on. This next section of the podcast, you're expecting it just to be a section of the podcast, but what's that at the door? There's a knocking at your door. Why didn't you go and have a look?
It's a gigantic wooden podcaster.
It's there. It is
some sort of gift from Shagged Married Annoyed. Yes, maybe we should stop seeing them as rivals. Maybe they are our friends. Let's bring that big wooden podcaster in. Let's wheel it in and all go to bed, shall we?
Oh no, Chris Ramsay's got a knife. Yes, we talked about the Trojan War. I think the main feature of this episode is that none of us really knew very much about the Trojans.
Hey, come off it.
Whoa.
Well, I certainly didn't know anything about
it. It was a cursed app, was it?
It was the cursed app.
That's true.
It
wasn't our fault.
That played a part, yeah.
So, yeah, the Trojan War.
The Trojan War. You brought back a little flash memory came to me of doing gigs in the past. Sometimes after a gig, stand-up gig, you'd end up going to the toilet in the same toilet that the audience were using. Because sometimes there's a separate loo for the performer.
The toilet of judgment.
The toilet of judgment. Essentially, sometimes you actually end up attending the toilet of judgment after your own gig.
You want the toilet of reflection, of self-reflection and self-flagellation.
Well, the toilet of delusion.
Yep. Depending on how it's going.
Yeah. The toilet of maybe they were just quite a quiet crowd.
The toilet of, well, it is only a Tuesday.
The toilet of maybe they've all just had some very, 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 very bad news today.
The toilet of maybe their smiles were broken and were facing the wrong way round. They say that magnetic north can suddenly flip round. Maybe smile north can flip. Maybe smile north has flipped. It's probably Smile North. I just won't Google it in case,
in case
it hasn't.
I won't do any rewrites. I'll just assume it's Smile North.
Safer to not do the rewrites. If it had been a play, then being quiet and scowling would have been a good thing. That toilet. Where'd you get the Toilet of Truth? Potentially. Have either of you ever been in the Toilet of Truth?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
So, what I do in the Toilet of Truth, or what I used to do in the Toilet of Truth, was develop a technique, which was I'd go into a cubicle, I'd sort of pluck up my ears and my fingers, and I'd sort of go... Because you can create a kind of internal chant.
A palace of ignorance.
to maintain the palace of ignorance within your own cranium. And create a very wonderland of ignorance. A very paradise, as you say.
But then don't you risk there being a situation where not only were they slightly underwhelmed by what you were doing on stage, they now also think you're a guy who walks into toilet cubicles and goes, me, 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 me.
You almost look, I tell you what you look like, a bit like, on the positive side, a child genius, but who is dying. So there's a lot of a dying child genius.
If only we'd listened. Possible world peace level child genius.
Yeah, a world peace level child genius that had worked out something to do with blue squishy chemicals. If you'd moulded them into the little yellow chemical squishies. Do you know what I mean? He'd come up with some sort of chemical solution to things.
Incredible grasp of science being displayed by Henry.
So Ben does look like that. Hmm. Although, Ben, your voice has gone...
It's like an old man, yeah. I've got an old man's voice in a dying child's body.
It's not just any old man, though. You've got the voice of a sort of Peter O'Toole or you've really got a sort of actor anecdote voice. You've developed a really lovely slow...
It's all where you've got to lean in a bit. It draws you in.
Yeah. And I was working with Miranda Fawcett at the time, and she was an absolute force of nature. That's what we called her. Miranda Fawcett of nature. It was a different time.
And I opened the toilet cubicle, and who should be there? Michael Gambon. He said, Have you been listening to yourself in the toilet as you shit? And I said, yes, don't you do the same? He says, yes, I do the soliloquy from Hamlet.
Of course, those days it required a full wind-up gramophone. None of these telephones the children of these days.
That's really what's... Yeah, so it's a lot going on. I, on the other hand...
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm now the only person I know that hasn't had COVID, as far as I know.
At all.
Have you never had it?
I don't think I've had COVID. Wow. I know.
Is it a case of one of those things where it's like, if you're the one who has never had COVID, you are COVID?
Smelt it, dealt it.
You're the source of it.
Yeah. I am COVID.
I think so.
Yeah.
I'm the COVID molecule.
Yeah.
It could be, you know. Or I prefer to think, though, that if in the film version, I am... Because normally the solution to a virus or a zombie plague or whatever... is a child, a chosen child, whose blood holds the formula.
The chosen middle-aged man.
It's the chosen middle-aged
Protect
man.
Protect him at all costs.
Protect him. He has stomach acid as well. That's unrelated to the virus.
It does slow him down. It is going to be hard to protect him because it does slow him down. And he has hurt his knee.
It slows him down.
And he really is. He gets a bit of a bad back sometimes. And he tries to do his yoga, but he is still a bit stiff in the morning. So
he's quite stiff. So the first bit of the mission is going to be actually raiding an old disused pharmacy and getting loads of Rennies before you transport him across the apocalypse-ridden country to the military base.
It's not very cinematic, but we're going to have to do it anyway.
It's not cinematic. He's going to need loads and loads and loads of Rennies. And he has to listen to half an hour of This Is Politics podcast every morning before he can really relax. again, it's not cinematic, but it makes him feel plugged into the news, calms him down, helps the acid.
Are you sure it's helping the acid or not causing the acid?
It might. Oh, I don't know. What's going with Mike's camera?
Is it still happening?
Basically, Mike, if you move your head to the right, we just get the sun.
Are you getting flared?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a J.J. Abrams film. Yeah.
Hang about.
J.J. Abrams film. Yeah. That's absolutely appalling.
No.
Oh, now he's gone. Cursed episode. So cursed.
Cursed app.
We're recording.
Okay.
I think, by the way,
yeah,
it's great to just be open about these things and just say this is a cursed app. You know, sure. What I mean? Like, why hide? There's no point hiding from it.
Yeah,
you know
it's
mean?
Fully cursed. I mean, mercifully, our listeners aren't, thank goodness, very rarely have to put up with any sort of technical snafu, do they?
Exactly. So, there's always a degree of cursedness around our apps. the dark claw of Beelzebub. Certainly its shadow.
Beelzebub.
To his friends, yeah.
All right, Beelzebub Robert. Fine. do you know what I mean? The shadow lies heavy on a lot of
I mean,
of
it feels
work,
like you've
it?
Leaned into the cursedness now, Henry, by boiling a kettle within earshot.
Unless he hasn't boiled a kettle and it's just boiling on its own.
It's Beelzebub bubbling.
Beelzebub needs a cuppa every now and then too. I think it could be that actually there's a newfound freedom to me in actually embracing the dark underworld and the dark lord.
I think this is the problem is that when Henry started saying it's a cursed app, so just then in between when Mike's mic wasn't working, we had a little chat, Henry excitedly said to me, this could be a cursed app. And I think what it means was Henry was thinking, I can just fucking dick around now. And
it takes the pressure off. It's fine. Yeah. It's like at Wimbledon when there's a cursed match. Everyone just has a laugh.
You yeah. know? When a tennis player sort of hobbles onto the court with one broken leg, you're like, ah.
That's just fun. It's a cursed
match.
Probably
not going to win this one, is he? But yeah.
Exactly. Djokovic gets his impressions kit out and everyone has a laugh, don't they?
Djokovic can really relax in this one.
It's obviously not ideal.
So you, I mean, I assume you.
What?
I assume you're making a coffee now.
No, I'm lining. I've got one lined up. I'm not making it yet. The coffee's boiled and ready to reboil.
Always got one eye on the break, haven't you?
Always yeah. got one eye on the break. You've
and
got
the
to.
Other eye. The other eye on a holiday.
It's like again, it's like Djokovic. There's so much in common.
Is that libelous? I can't remember if he does think that or not.
I think as long as you've asked yourself whether or not it's libelous, you're okay.
No.
Yeah. I think now that we do have an editor on board, hi, Laura, by the way.
Hi, Laura.
We have certainly any criminal actions or libel suits have to come, well, are on her. On her now, aren't they?
Because, she's now culpable, legally speaking.
She, yeah. She is the author, technically, of the work.
I think this is the first time the listeners are hearing about Laura.
Yeah. Hi, Laura.
We have Laura now. She's our superpower. She's the opposite of Beelzebub.
Yes, it's changed the world, hasn't it? Rather than us sharing the edits and me, for example, previously I would do an edit and it would take me about 5 weeks and I have to do everything by hand.
Well, you'd actually transfer it onto tape, wouldn't you? Which is
onto C90 and I'd be slicing little bits of C90 tape and splicing
That's right.
them again.
You'd then write the whole thing. You would dictate the whole thing to yourself, yep, exactly. Right? Wouldn't you? So you'd read it out, write
Based
it down.
On the recordings and do a transcript and then re-record that.
Yeah.
And there's also the tapestry stage. You'd create a sort of bio-tapestry style.
Yeah, it's a kind of safety net to make sure I haven't missed any details.
And then you would, a bit like... T.S. Eliot did with The Wasteland, isn't it? You'd cut up all the actual dialogue. You'd cut it up into little bits, and then you would. But unlike T.S. Eliot, who would glue it onto larger bits of paper with the help of Ezra Pound.
Oh, I put them all on a woodland walk, and you have to find them. Yeah,
you spread them around the woodland walk.
Yeah,
and then it was down to Pat, then, wasn't it?
It was Pat.
Well, Patricia out.
She would then perform them in a promenade piece. Which I then would have to record on an 8-track that I didn't know how to use.
And you could only then transfer it via other people called Pat. So then Pat Cash, for example, to bring it to tennis. You could copy it to Pat Cash, couldn't you? Yeah. He'd have to memorise it. He could then take an easy jet plane.
To Patrick Stewart's private island.
Which EasyJet is still doing flights out to on Thursday.
Patagascar. Yeah.
Then obviously another flight to Patagonia, the international home of Pats.
That's right.
Yeah. Where it'll be translated into Patagonian Welsh.
Pat Shop meet at the airport. Yeah, he would oversee that process, Patagonian Welsh. You'd all eat two beef patties, wouldn't you, as your...
Yeah, that's not part of it. that's just coincidence.
Because a lot of the Pats, because several hundred Pats at this point have been involved in the process, thought... This bit disappointing, the catering, there's literally two beef patties. They assumed that it was because it was some sort of pun lunch, but no. Turns out, no.
Yeah, and some of these are pats you've never heard of. These are just standard civilian, you know, Pat Slater.
Yeah, never heard of
Pat Schroeder.
Never heard of
Pat Montgomery.
Yeah.
Just Pat's getting on with their day to day. So it was work intensive, is what we're saying.
Can I now hear some kind of coffee maker?
Yeah.
The extent to which you've taken liberties on this episode.
It's at least your worries, mate. Is that taking liberties?
Well, you wouldn't normally make a loud coffee in earshot.
No, I know, exactly. No, exactly. Yeah. I'm going to turn it off.
We also know that Henry would bring an espresso onto a live show with him, but he just knows to plug it in. That's the only thing stopping him.
Okay, hang on.
He's just going, is he? He's going.
I tell you what, it wasn't just you, the listener, who was bored during this episode. It was actually, boards were actually part of the topic. Once.
Very good. And I was certainly hanging 10 off every of your words during that episode.
What does that mean?
Hanging 10.
Hanging 10.
It's when you walk to the end of the surfboard and all of your toes are hanging off the end.
Well, why didn't you bring that up during the episode, mate? It's a bit late now. That's great content.
That's a good point. I think it's the only thing I know about surfing as well.
What's it called? You know when, so you mentioned hanging 10. What's it called when you're going in a wave and it's like it turns into a sort of tube?
Catching a tube.
Is that what it's called?
I think it is just catching a tube.
Is that catching a tube?
Yeah.
Is there a thing called like the green room or the green zone you go into or the green tunnel?
Oh, I think that's Davy Jones' locker.
Oh, that's when you go, that's when you go down to the bad place.
Oh.
There we go, a bit of jargon for you, none of which comes up in the episode, all the extras.
Although most of the surfers I've met have certainly been in the green zone, if you know what I mean.
Oh, he's miming a cannabis cigarette going down his mouth.
Oh, lovely. I said, Jenny didn't know what he meant.
Anyway, this is some extra bits from our episode about surfing.
Hello. Okay. Right. So, I might put a jumper on.
Go for it.
The one you've just taken off.
That'll be the one, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Best one for it.
Are you all sixes and sevens today?
I am, aren't I? I'm at sixes and sevens. Sorry.
Skittish.
It's because of this new earlier start.
What, 23 past 10?
Yeah, it's really discombobulated me.
This is the early start where we started at the same, agreed to start at the same time.
Yeah.
But also agreed yesterday that we'd really try and start on time. That's what you mean. Which we didn't anyway. Well, Ben and I did it.
Everyone knows that lateness, like there's a slow creep of lateness into any system that has me in it. that's a rule. So it's happened with a personal trainer, which we've discussed. Mm-hmm. It's happened here on this podcast. There's a slow creep of lateness into the system.
I like it though. It feels like a bit of slack in the system.
It's a bit of slack. You need a bit of slack in the system.
Yeah.
Yeah. But eventually that creeps into the point where we have a sort of leap podcast today, isn't it?
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So for you, this is actually first thing Thursday morning, whereas Ben and I are on Friday.
This is first thing Thursday morning, season 11. Let's do this. Yeah. You do need slack in the system. Well, it's like any 18th century
gibbet.
Naval gibbet, isn't it? If you can have rope running through casters or wooden or metal.
Mm-hmm. Pulleys?
Preferably brass.
brass pulleys. Yeah, if there's no slack in there, what have you got?
I'm not even clear on what a gibbet is. Is that where you hang people off?
No. A gibbet is where you put the dead bodies inside if you're an 18th century smuggler.
Is it? Yeah, those little sort of mini cages for one, you know?
Well, like the kind of thing somebody might dance in inside like a nightclub in Ibiza.
In very poor taste. Yes, absolutely.
it's what a London estate agent would probably call an actually a bijou little apartment with a surprisingly pleasing open plan aspect.
I wonder how long that joke's been viable for. I think probably since the 70s people have been making that joke about London estate agents.
Oh, it's beyond that. I think it's, I think Dickens started it back in the day.
It's a good one though, isn't it? No, but a gibbet, in real terms, that was a skeleton in a cage, essentially, hanging over a village.
Oh, I see. I get that. Yeah. So what's a jib?
That's a bit of wood on a ship, isn't it, that swings left and right and you've got to duck under it?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, isn't that jibing?
Isn't it jiving?
If you're jiving at jiving. Sea, Mike, then you're not going to make it in the Royal Navy.
Well, if you jive on a yacht, then I think you're turning left. you're jibbing, you're turning right.
Or portward. What do you think jibbing is, Mike?
I think jibbing is turning away a certain way on a dinghy, I think. Hmm. It's the opposite of tacking.
But I think it's moving the jib, isn't it? So you're both right.
What is the jib, though?
The jib is it's a lateral bit of wood that moves left and right and just to sort of...
Isn't that the boom?
I think it's to... Oh, maybe that's the boom, is it?
Welcome to Three Bean Salad. Hi. This week, for some reason, we're discussing
the anatomy of a wayfarer dinghy.
And they're not agreeing with each other. Let's join the beans. All I know is I've once in my life done sailing as a kid. Some I can't remember where it was. It was some sort of holiday. I was on a small boat in the middle of a lake. I could see my family in the distance getting in the car and drag.
It's definitely another family assassination attempt, isn't it? He wondered why your father was drilling into the bottom of it seconds before he left. Didn't seem to make any sense. So the fishes could breathe, he said.
You've got to make air holes for the fishes, Henry. Just like that poisonous tortoise we bought you last year, which didn't work.
Which you wouldn't eat.
Now, give me your bag. You won't need your bag, Henry. You can swap it. Hey, have this bag of chum. Have this open bag of chum. We're just going to give you a little shove. A little shove. Out you go.
Yeah, I do remember being on a lake. I think the advice I was getting from my family was, don't duck.
You need to work on your posture.
The rest of the family are going to duck, Henry, but don't duck. And the boom swept across. Oh, damn, it's just broken his legs again. Damn!
So gibbet-wise...
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever thought about gibbets before. I've seen them in films.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think, there's a famous film, isn't there, with the scene with a guy in a gibbet? Or is that quite a lot of films?
I think it feels like quite a lot of films.
Yeah. So someone sort of walks into town.
Where it's sort of up top left in the foreground of the shot as they're rolling into the sort of quite dodgy port town.
Is there a Monty Python bit with a guy in a gibbet? More than likely, right?
Feels like it.
Yeah.
I'm still not clear what a gibbet is. Have we established that?
Well, you're the one who...
You told me what a gibbet was.
That's what we're basing what a gibbet is on, is your explanation.
What did I say it was?
You said it was the old cage for one, the punishment cave.
Oh, that one.
To sort of dry out, starve to death.
Sorry.
And demonstrate, for example, a pirate or a brigand, highwayman.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. Sorry. I was, I'd stored it in the wrong brain compartment briefly. It was...
What did you put it in? Kind of pork cutlets?
Justin Timberlake?
Oh, imagine him in a gibbet. No, I was storing it because we've got boats. We've got boat section of brain, which doesn't have that much in it, to be honest. I should really clean this place out and use it for something else. But also sort of Cornish towns part of my brain.
The Mevagissey zone.
It's a great example.
They're both, and they're next door to each other. But gibbets, well, yeah, that's what we're talking about, isn't it? I've seen them in a book using my mind's eye, Ben.
I think they were pretty much in the front page illustration of every book I read as a small boy.
Yeah.
Probably. It was either that or a map.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask you, Henry, a question about gibbets, but now that I'm losing confidence that you know anything about gibbets, I sort of saw you really as a kind of gibbet expert.
Okay.
Well, certainly someone that you could rely on for gibbet knowledge, but now I'm not sure. But what I'm going to ask you is it a method of execution?
No, I don't think it is.
Because skeleton in the gibbet is a thing you see.
I think it's two things. I think it's where you stash the corpse. Or so where you put the corpse and you hang it near piers and stuff. I think it might feature in the Pirates of the Caribbean movie, maybe, doesn't it?
I always assume they were starved to death.
Oh, or maybe they are starved to death in it as well, which is even more heinous.
Because they never... I mean, this is sort of 18th century kind of time. They never missed an opportunity to be gruesome and brutal.
That's true.
Right?
That's true.
Why would you kill them first when you can just let them... Wither. Bit of fun, isn't it?
Have you been to the London dungeons?
Well, yes, but not for a very long time, I don't think.
I think there might have been one in there.
Yes.
I think that's the kind of place you get a gibbet. But I think a gibbet, to me, it's in the category of thing, a gibbet, which is, on the one hand, it's quite exciting and macabre and like kind of swashbuckling and sort of grisly and it's got all that stuff attached to it. But also, in its current form, it's like, look, we've got a gibbet full of cheddar. It's just part of a slightly boring holiday in Britain where you visit a seaside, have a pasty and visit, and look, we've got a gibbet full of pasties. Nibble. Do you know what I mean? I imagine it features quite heavily in quite a few...
Stultifying days out.
Not amazing small museums and stultifying days out. Yeah,
yeah. No, I know what you mean. Yeah.
I'm actually now a bit hot. I'm thinking about taking off this jumper. The one that I've...
You do that.
So I'm just going to do that quickly.
Why? Henry can't hear us, Mike. Let's put him in a gibbet.
What's that?
Nothing, Henry.
Come on, Baines, you can't do that.
Of the three of us, I think if I was a betting man and I had to put money on one of us having been surfing in our life,
yeah,
it's got to be Mike Wozniak.
Do you reckon?
Resident beach hunk.
Oh, yeah.
Absolute beach hunk. With so much foot strength, he can just grip onto that surfboard just using his feet.
Don't even need to put on the rails, do I?
Whereas I like to actually lean with one elbow on the rail and look out at the sunset when I'm on the surfboard.
And Ben's got full banisters on his, hasn't he?
Mike, have you surfed?
I have surfed, incompetently, yes. But I have surfed. I've never got beyond the... Have you ever surfed?
I've done bodyboarding, which is the sort of, you know, not really surfing.
I've never got beyond the sort of training boards that are about sort of 18 foot long and 11 foot wide and sort of unsinkable. I've had a go on a sort of proper board and it's absolutely hopeless. There's just no chance whatsoever.
My fear with surfboarding is I have always kind of ducked it and avoided it because, well, A, no one's ever invited me, but also... It's the kind of new hobby where, for me, I don't have a lot of physical grace and I don't have a lot of physical sort of competence at new skills. So I know that if I was to go surfing, for example, so I'd be absolutely terrible at it. I've been through the situation in other spheres of life that where I'm with a group of people, we're learning a new skill, and I'm doing something wrong that the instructor hasn't seen before. And then also then another thing has to happen where so we're gonna have to do it where there's two groups, so the rest of you are onto this level and me and Henry are gonna have to get him. So we're gonna have to do the thing where he's still getting off, trying to get off the beach and into the water. We're still gonna, because he's struggling at the ankle level, there's some kind of ankle problem. Oh, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you get held behind in kind of rudimentary level.
So the thing that they do where they're all lying out on the beach and people are lying on their board on the beach and then jumping onto the board, you're missing the board. You're just jumping onto some sand or jumping into a passing ice cream van.
Yeah.
You've somehow swallowed a seagull.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there'll be a lot of stuff which be, look, just breathe, Henry. Just don't overthink it, mate. You're overthinking it. It's just a board. It's just a piece of plastic. What the hell? I don't know what it is. I don't know what the fucking point.
Why have you started a barbecue on the surfboard? You're gonna melt the wax.
Maybe surfing is a bloody waste of time. Fuck it.
It sort of feels like to be good at surfing, it sort of has to become your entire lifestyle, right? It's not just the act of riding the wave. It's also the act of owning a van, living in the van to an extent,
having a barbecue set in the van.
Yes.
Yeah.
Being young and cool and easy breezy, but also getting up 4 hours before everyone else in the universe. Sort of Frankfurt-based sort of financial legal consultants.
That's a bit of
a rub, isn't it?
The other thing about surfing is it's one of those things where, because I think I've actually tried windsurfing and I really struggled with it. It's the kind of thing where there's a learning curve, you know, bit you have to get through where it's just you instantly fall off the surfboard. And again, you fall off the surfboard. 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 It's now Saturday afternoon. You fall off the surfboard. So it's now 4. If we're going to make it to the pub for dinner, we've got to go now. You fall off the surfboard. And like, you've had your day and all you've done is fall off the surfboard. It's like, why am I ever going to do that again? Because you have to go through sort of like 6 months of that, I imagine, before you can... Is that true, Mike?
I don't know. That does make sense, though. Yeah, you're right. It is a hobby where there's just abject, measurable failure for quite a long time. Because you can scuba dive a bit, right? Someone can teach you how to scuba dive, and you can, even if you're in a pool in the shallow end, you can say that you've scuba dived. But can you say you've surfed if you haven't actually managed to get both feet and stood up and therefore have I surfed, really? Or have I tumbled off into a small wave on a surfboard?
The fact is, you can't fall off the National Gallery.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
So I don't think going to the National Gallery is a skill.
That's where you'll find me catching a wave, catching my own personal bit of bliss.
My Holbein wave.
My Holbein wave. Now, one thought I've had about surfboarding is, because I think it's quite dangerous, isn't it? And I think
that would get on the nerves of your instructor as well, Henry, by the way, the fact that you repeatedly call it surfboarding.
Is it? Oh, God, yeah.
That would really, again, they would think it was a piss take, that it was deliberate, that you're trying to niggle away.
That would be the straw that broke the camel's back, because it'd be the fact that I was insisting on bringing sandwiches with me into the sea. There'd be the fact that there'd be so many things that built up. The fact that I was constantly reversing the board, slipping off it, constantly asking about the risk of shark attacks, all that kind of stuff. But it'd be the calling it surfboarding that would be the
if he calls it surfboarding one more time, I'm gonna. You're gonna eat this surfboard, eat it slice by slice.
But no, I've always had the thought, which is at least if you can't sprain your ankle on it because it's so wet, you just slip off and go in the water. Think that's true?
Yeah, I don't think ankle sprains are the main problem. I think sort of getting knocked out and drowning probably is a bigger problem.
Well, the hard ones as well. Yeah, you have to tie them to your leg, don't you? You tie a little strap around your ankle so you don't lose it, so they get washed away. The only time I've tried a really proper hard surfboard, basically that's what happens. You fall off and then this thing that's tied to your leg just repeatedly whacks you around the head until you slowly spat back onto the beach.
One thing that I know happens is that people who are on surfboards seen from below look to a shark.
Like a cheese board.
Look like a cheese board.
It's
like
a mid-level gastropub cheese board.
Yeah, really, really.
A platter of smoked meats.
Yeah.
Maybe with a couple of mini cornichons as well.
And they go straight in.
Did you see this week in the news, a great white shark washed up on a beach somewhere and its liver had been eaten? But just its liver.
By a human who'd been in its stomach, who'd been on the insides?
No, by a killer whale.
Oh.
And basically, killer whales were just like showing their dominance as being the most badass sort of shark-like animal by taking out some great white sharks and eating their livers.
But just went for the offal.
They just like the liver, yeah.
With a bit of gravy and mash.
From the outside, yeah. It's like the way that killer whales will just quietly, quite often remind us that they are absolute killing machines.
Yeah. Yeah, they've earned the name.
They've been in the news a bit lately. They didn't they attack a boat or something?
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, wasn't it they've learned how to sink?
To mimic a boat. So you actually get on it. You go out to sea, and it's only when you're actually out to sea.
You pay the ferryman.
They're so good at it. You're actually on what to you is day three of the cruise when they show their hand.
I think killer whales have been learning and teaching each other how to capsize boats, like yachts and stuff.
Fair play to them. It is time for another species to take over, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's them.
Maybe it's not going to be cockroaches, maybe it's going to be orcas.
And also, if you're going to start taking down humanity, maybe start with people that are into sailing. I mean, it's not it's not the worst place to start, probably, is it? That's a bit harsh. There's nothing wrong with it as a hobby. The last thing I had to say about surfing, by the way, was simply sex wax.
Oh, it's a bit of fun, isn't it?
Oh. What is sex wax?
Yeah. Don't know.
It's literally just a wax you put on your surfboard, and they called it sex wax to make it sexy.
I think the idea was to make it sound sexy, and actually, of course, it sounds sounds horrific.
That's horrific, doesn't it? It really does. The other thing I was thinking of was the film Point Break.
Great fun film.
Do you know the film?
I do know the film.
Ben, do you know the film?
It's peak Keanu Reeves.
It's Keanu Reeves and
Patrick Swayze. FBI greenhorn Keanu Reeves goes undercover to try and crack the case of a gang of bank robbers who go around dressed up as American presidents. I think they call themselves the ex-presidents.
Ooh.
And it's a classic thing where he infiltrates. He's a bit of a, probably quite a square, boring by the book type. He infiltrates this gang and they're surfers. So they're wild. They're connected to nature. They're sort of, and there's classic scenes of where he's with this group and they kind of, they'll walk down the beach at sunset and they'll be kind of hollering. Like the men will be going, wahoo!
They're wild and free.
Yeah.
They're off the chain.
They're wild and free.
Yeah. They're sticking it to the man. And Keanu Reeves is the man, or is he?
Yeah.
Have you really never seen it, Ben?
No, this sounds totally up my alley, though.
I mean, you're in for an absolute treat.
I can't wait.
There's a cameo from the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
What? That's put me off it somewhat.
Yeah, there's a scene with like, why are five of the cops naked but just wearing socks over their Johnsons?
Yeah, is that scene? It's very hard to write that in.
And why are they? Why is there that slap bass playing?
I'll never forget the actor Keanu Reeves in that film, standing there with his surfboard, a large plank of inanimate matter.
Here we go.
nice waxy finish, but wooden to the core, solid, immobile, and incapable of human emotion.
And the surfboard wasn't bad either.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage the old switcheroo.
Okay, yes, I see what you're saying. Yeah, you're saying that. What? Hang on, I thought you were trying to say that. Oh, he's gone the other... What? Oh, he's gone the other way around. He means that... Oh, that's what he meant. What? So, what he said before wasn't actually... I thought it... Now he's gone the other way around with it. Oh, God.
It's the old switcheroo.
Griffin emails, dear Benjamin Partridge, Michael Benian, and Was Doggy.
Okay, yeah.
I'm not going to encourage that. I am in trouble, and it is my belief that you are partially responsible.
Uh-oh.
The other day, I was in NYC.
Very nice.
And
nice.
Stopped for afternoon tea on my way out of town.
That's what they do in NYC.
Classic New York drink, isn't it?
Hey, want more bourbons with this? You're putting milk in Earl Grey, you're out of your mind.
You call this a motherfucking cake tree?
Yeah, classic New York. Yeah.
Upon leaving the restaurant, I noticed a jar glistening in the golden hour NYC sunlight on the top of one of the shelves. This jar? Brunson pickle. Mm-hmm. I bought six jars. Blimey. And drove the 2 hours home.
I bet he was in a kind of it might have been like an English themed.
Yes, to get off in tea as well.
Tea and stuff. Yeah.
Fast forward a couple of days. My mouth is no longer my mouth. It is my Branson hole.
No. That's right. Yeah.
My refrigerator is no longer than my refrigerator. It is my Branson cabinet.
Yeah.
If I go for more than a few hours without a Branson fix, a taste bubbles up from the back of my throat to the front of my mouth that I can only describe as volcanic ennui. I believe this to be the last of the Branston flavour exiting my short-term memory before it is replaced by a very conspicuous absence of Branston. The reason I believe this is in least part your fault is that I wouldn't have even known what Branston pickle is if you hadn't mentioned it. Also, I live in America. I would advise you to be more responsible with your words as they can lead to serious consequences. Now I can never have a culinary career, something that I never really wanted anyway, but now definitely cannot have thanks to my traumatised Branston hole, brackets mouth. Sincerely, Griffin.
Yeah, sorry. So has he become basically addicted to Branson?
I think he's become addicted to Branson, and it's also ruined his mouth.
Yeah,
well, it does that.
And it's all he can think about, all he can taste.
I'm sorry. And it's cold comfort to know that the only way to get over this is by going cold turkey, which ironically is a dish which would go very, very well with a nice little bit of Branson. Isn't it? And that's the trap he's in.
He's not the first. He's not alone.
No.
Hang on, guys. I don't think we should be apologising for this. I think we've introduced him to one of life's great wonders, and
that's true.
That's true. I also we did caveat it from the beginning. I think with warnings of the dangers of Branson, just how intense it is, how almost ungodly, isn't it? It's almost like you're dabbling.
And I think probably someone who's gone in that hard with the Branson pickle is probably the character type that it would have gone in very hard with something. It just needed a thing to go in hard with. And it could have been bank jobs.
Could have been meth,
you know?
Could have been meth. Could have been, what's it called when you...
Taxidermy.
Taxidermy, that's the one, yeah. I was going to say when you fill up a dead animal with with bits of old newspaper.
With M&Ms.
With M&Ms, bits of old newspaper. And ping pong ball eyes.
Okay, so that's your extra beans. There's one last bit. The other two have gone now, but I've just remembered that we've got this last bit, which is that we were recording an advert for an insurance company, which will end up on the podcast. And it was about car insurance, and somebody made a reference to people who sit in the middle lane on the motorway. And then Henry just kind of outed himself as an absolute driving bastard and sort of doesn't see the problem with it. And so he mentioned the other day, he was like, oh, maybe we could just stick that on the extra beans. And I was like, oh, really? Because he came out of it very badly, but he seems up for it. I'm going to ring him and just make sure. But let's see.
Hello.
Hello, Henry. I'm in the middle of editing the extra beans episode.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, we talked about how we might include some of the offcuts from when we were recording an advert, and you talked about whether it's okay to drive in the middle of the lane.
Oh, yes, yes.
I just want to make entirely sure that you're happy for this to be broadcast to our Patreon listeners.
Well, because you think it's a contentious issue, I know that.
Well, I just think that, you know, that our current Patreon listeners probably hold you in a fairly high esteem at the moment.
Yeah.
And I think you'll be going down to sort of Pol Pot, kind of Idi Amin, Stalin.
History's greatest monsters.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it does have that a bit about it. But you know what? I'm willing to put a line in the sand here, and it's like which side of the line are you on?
Mm.
And I'm happy to actually, you know, if I only end up with a small cabal of really like dyed in the wool like monsters with me, I'm prepared to like just sort of
team up with them and see. Colonel Kurtz style.
Yeah, Kurtz style. Just join me in the middle lane. Let's see how far we get.
Let's drive all the way to the jungle.
Let's go all the way to the jungle in the middle lane.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, I'm going to do it then.
Yeah, me and my middle lane easters.
Okay. Well, let's. I'll be really interested to see the comments we get.
Yeah, I think it's going to be end of day stuff. But you know, I think it's I'm ready for it. Let's do it.
All right. Great. All right. Thanks, Henry. See ya.
All right. Thanks, Ben. Bye.
Bye.
I've never actually understood, why is it that bad to be in the middle lane?
Wow. You are the problem, Henry. Yeah.
I'm just getting a couple of plums of the roads. Is this the equivalent?
It is.
Is that the equivalent? Because for me, it's, what's the difference? I mean, we're all just driving in a straight line, aren't we?
Oh, God. Oh,
I mean,
God.
I don't want to be Mr. Slow Coach, but I'm also not overtaking everyone. I'm middle. That's exactly where I belong, middle.
The middle lane is an overtaking lane, Henry. Yeah.
So you're forcing people to undertake, or you're forcing lots of traffic to overtake in one lane?
What's the right-hand lane, then?
That's for overtaking people who are also overtaking.
Lane. So they're both overtaking lanes. Yeah. So it's just a lane. I mean, it's one of the main lanes. It's just like all the other lanes, except the one on the left, which is the non-overtaking. So you've got two overtaking lanes. So are you telling me that the right-hand lane is for the occasion when you're overtaking someone who is themselves at that very point overtaking someone?
Ideally, yes.
That's never happened. I'm sorry. Utopian thinking is actually dangerous. There is no such world where that happens, Mike. You know it. We all know it.
I've seen it 1,000 times with my own eyes.
Seen someone overtaking someone who at that exact moment happens to also be overtaking. It's sort of coincidence lane.
It's not like, coincidence lane.
Oh my God, I just thought it. We're both doing this at the same time, lane.
No, because if you've got loads of cars on the road, that's happening. It's happening thousands of times. It's happening as we speak right now.
The right-hand lane is for a provincial dad who is trying to drive to Guernsey. Isn't it?
You think it's for that guy and emergency vehicles only?
It's for the person who's breaking the speed limit.
Henry, it seems like you think of the motorway lanes in the same way that the lanes happen in a swimming pool.
Yes.
Yeah. What's the difference?
Oh, God. It's literally illegal to sit in the middle lane.
I'm not sitting in the middle lane. but I'm sorry, but there's the letter of the law and there's the spirit of the law. The right-hand lane is for emergency services and people who are breaking the law by speeding, yeah? You right. see them every day. They're, and then the slow coaches, very elderly people that can't see above the steering wheel, or learner drivers, are in the left-hand lane. And most people, in the same way that most people like the band Crowded House, most people are driving in the middle lane listening to Crowded House.
Don't try and, like, yoke yourself to the good feelings people have about Crowded House.
That's exactly what I'm doing. Thing is, Mike, with your system, really, you should only ever actually be in the left-hand lane as a state of being. Like, that's where you belong. All cars kind of belong in the left-hand lane, is what you're saying. And it's only when you're doing something specific. Which is, so what you're trying to tell me is people in the right-hand lane, they actually want to be in the left-hand lane. They just happen to be overtaking someone that's overtaking someone.
Yeah.
That is just not true. I'm sorry, that's just not the world we live in.
But that's still, that doesn't give you an excuse to hog the middle lane. That's still an outrage.
But I'm not a loser. I don't want to go in the left-hand lane. It's completely uncool. No,
but you look like the biggest loser in the universe. People who hog the middle lane look like the biggest
losers. I'm dancing on my own in my bedroom. Like, I don't care what I look like.
An absolute fucking dickhead if you're hogging the middle lane. And everyone on the road is thinking, who's that fucking dickhead? And unless it's a woman or a man who is 805 years old.
No, they're in the left lane. They're not in the middle lane.
Then they're a dickhead. Unless they're someone who's just completely confused and didn't know what a motorway was because it existed after their birth.
I'm sorry. You're telling me that the guy overtaking me, speeding in the right-hand lane, is going to go back in the left? He's never been in the left-hand lane, that guy.
You should not. If you're
not going back to the left-hand lane.
I mean, I'm amazed you survived if you've been the middle lane hogger.
I'm not so much a middle lane hogger.
Because sooner or later, someone is going to be so enraged by it, they're going to drive past you, they're going to see that it's a middle-aged man hogging the middle lane.
Screw you.
And they're going to follow you. They're going to follow you home, and they're going to drive over your head.
They're going to say, they're not going to say middle-aged man. They're going to say there's someone in the bloom of their youth in there. And I don't know if it's a man. That's what they're going to say. But so, Mike, what you're saying is, if I'm in the left-hand lane, right? Yeah. There's a bunch of slow coaches. I overtake one. Yeah. What is the point of me going back in just so I can overtake the next person?
You're not going to be causing congestion, and you're not going to cause accidents.
Okay. I'm actually breaking the law, by the way. Could I get in trouble?
I don't know if you're breaking the law. You're definitely being a dickhead.
Yep. All right, guilty as charged.